welcome back to The Mother of Democracy, a sub-series of the Civic Flame podcast, where we take a deep dive into constitutional democracy in all its socio-legal glory. I'm your host, Amber Veo, professor of law and policy at Worcester State University. If you've followed my other podcast, Birthzillas, you know that I specialize in maternal health, and in particular, reproductive politics. Mother of Democracy merges all that constitutional democracy stuff with all that reproductive politics stuff, and says, full democracy is not possible as long as misogyny is a national and global threat. Hatred of women, or misogyny, is the number one cause of violence, institutional and interpersonal. If you can't handle that, this podcast is not for you. If you want to make an actual difference in the world, understand what the barriers are to living in actual freedom for all of us, and be part of the solution, then welcome to the club. Today, we're looking a bit out of my wheelhouse and going global. So grab your epistemic passports because we're heading to South Korea. South Korea is known for a lot of things, in particularly lately, K-pop Demon Hunters, which is amazing and you should see it. Not allowing a coup, the United States should take some notes on this one. And of course, its economic and technological prowess, which are considerable. Like the United States, over half of young women and more than 3/4 of young men in South Korea say they'd like to get married. However, in both places, young women regularly say that no matter how much they want to find someone they could marry and have a family with, they can't. It feels unsafe to do so, and the ways in which society treats women make this impossible. Enter South Korea's 4B movement. The 4Bs are no sex, no giving birth, no dating men, and no marriage with men. The 4B movement goes beyond marching in the streets and making a fuss about it and demanding rights, and works quietly and collectively to simply divest from men. I don't personally think that this is the way of the future, but I think it's something that we need to really talk about. These kind of social movements, particularly when they rise to the level of separatist social movements, don't come from nowhere. They come from socio-legal, economic, political, and interpersonal conditions that make even very rational people think, I can't be part of this anymore. I have to protect myself in some way. And so this is why we're talking about it. This is not an advocacy podcast, but it is to say, when we see these movements rise, we need to start asking questions about how democratic governance, personal and socio-legal sustainability, and all of these things are possible when a context is so horrible, it brings people to the point of completely divesting from other people in their society. If you're the kind of person who wants to brush this off as angry feminists, you should probably start listening now, or you can grab your big boy thinking caps and try to do some actual work here. Because contrary to the Gamergate incel broligarch brigade laying the pathway for self-radicalization for so many Americans and others, most women around the world don't want to divest from men. Check out Bell Hooks, who is a remarkable feminist and writer. She writes a book called The Will to Change. She outlines for those who don't understand or can't articulate as well as she can that women divest from men like this because they are a danger to us or because society puts us in a space where we're doing all of the work and the men are just passive participants and nobody wants to marry their son, except for really creepy people that you should stay away from. But a week ago, a man in Louisiana killed 8 children, 7 of whom were his, in a shooting spree because he was going through a divorce. And because he was going through a divorce, there are plenty of people who are, if not excusing his behavior, at least rationalizing it. This violent, abusive, horrible behavior came because a man couldn't handle the shame of getting divorced. This was ego, right? That's what this was. He didn't want to lose his possession or his position in the status hierarchy. It's not that he was sad that he's getting divorced. It's anger that what he feels belongs to him is being taken away. He doesn't kill his children because he's depressed or out of control. He does it because he is in control. He has decided to punish their mothers for rejecting him, to punish them for refusing to give him what he thinks he deserves. And this is what other feminists and I can't seem to get through a lot of thick skulls. Rape is about power, not sex. Abuse is about power and control. Murder is about power. Femicide is about power. These men don't lose control and hit women, right? If it was just a loss of control when they were angry, they'd beat up their bosses. They'd beat up other men who are bigger than them. But they don't. They wait until they're home. They wait until they can hide because they know it's wrong. They wait until they can punch down on someone they think is weaker than them. Men murder us. They rape us. They torture us. They beat us. They murder our children. They rape our children. They torture our children. They beat our children. The National Domestic Violence Hotline notes that 29% of women experience rape, physical violence, and stalking. One in four women and one in seven men experience severe physical violence in relationships. I'm speaking about women specifically because women are the most likely to be killed, but also the kind of patriarchal structure that leads to the violence against women is the same structure that does not take violence against men seriously. We fix the problem for the people who are the worst off in the problem, and that actually does trickle up. We fix the patriarchy that kills women. We fix the patriarchy that crushes men. That's how this works. Women are constantly told to pick better men. But when we do, we're told there's a male loneliness epidemic and it's our fault. So in response to us getting raped, murdered, or beaten, it's our fault for not picking better. When we opt out, because so many of y'all look the same, we're met with the political and economic bros taking away our right to abortion, to birth control, threatening to take away our right to vote, and this weird techno-authoritarian funding tradwife BS, because we did pick better, and they didn't like that we didn't pick them. Because the reality is, they don't want us to choose better, because that would mean they'd have to be better. They want us to choose them and not complain when they hurt us, when they kill us, and when they hurt and kill our kids. The male loneliness epidemic is a myth. As we'll talk about another time, women are equally likely to be lonely as men. The difference is that men make it other people's problem. Women are lonely because men won't step up to be safe, to be equal partners to us. Men are lonely because men won't step up. They become incels because that is easier than deprogramming themselves from the patriarchy. And they blame women for that. They blame women for choosing better instead of lowering their standards. They blame women for their isolation, for their indoctrination, instead of blaming the men who are making money hand over fist, selling them patriarchy, selling them rage, and ensuring that by the time they're 50, they will probably have a heart attack or harm themselves or others. There are so many men making so much money off of destroying the lives of other men. And when women speak about it, we are called angry feminist bitches. We're not called feminazis anymore because Nazis are cool again, apparently. And the problem keeps going. And women are kind of tired of saying, hey, we've been telling you for decades how to get out of this problem, and we're kind of done with the fact that you won't. In the US, we keep trying to solve this problem through law, through pink-washed marketing campaigns. Well, in South Korea, the response to widespread and graphic violence against women takes a different shape. The Korea Herald says 1 in 5 women in Korea face intimate partner violence. The Korea Times in 2025 refers to Korea as having, quote, deadly indifference to violence against women. The United Nations issued a report in 2025 that includes statistics suggesting a high rate of femicide, the murder of women, and intimate partner violence. The UN also noted that we don't truly understand the scope of the violence because there are not adequate statistics. In 2024, Korean Herald writer Lee Jae-un, and I apologize if I said her name wrong, reported on a, quote, wave of murders targeting ex-girlfriends, end quote, and the lack of what is called a safe breakup, meaning that even if you leave the guy, you're at risk of violence, rape, and murder, very much like the man who just murdered 8 children in Louisiana. She further reported that over 26% of women in relationships report intimate partner violence. To put this in more stark terms, she quotes, "In Korea, a woman is killed or almost killed by a man in a close relationship with her every 19 hours," end quote. But intimate partner violence isn't the only part of the 4B movement. The working conditions in South Korea are, well, intense would be a nice way to put it. Work culture is brutal. South Korea has the second longest working hours of all OECD countries. Despite the official work hours being around 40 hours a week, there are hours upon hours of overtime, and you are simply expected to do it, or you're not considered enough of a team player. In addition, women there, just as here, take on a bulk of the housework and childcare, and this is what results in South Korea having one of the lowest birth rates in the world. Women physically cannot afford to live without working, and they cannot sacrifice their careers by having huge gaps for the time it takes to raise a child. But doing the school run, finding tutors and after-school programs for children in a very education-minded society, doing the housework in a traditionalist and patriarchal society, all while working 40-plus hours a week in a society with an extreme work culture, and having no real help at home from husbands because of that traditional patriarchal society, put South Korean women in a space where they've rejected the have-it-all myth by saying, yeah, no help, no kids. Like so many other places, the men could rise to the occasion in the home, in the relationships. They aren't. The capitalists wouldn't rise to the occasion and adjust working hours and create a work-life balance for women and children. So our South Korean sisters are getting it done. And they're saying, if you don't do your part, then we simply will not do ours anymore. As I said before, I don't advocate the 4B movement, and it is not without its criticisms, particularly homophobia and transphobia. But I think it's a good wake-up call for people around the world. Women are opting out of these systems of oppression that are built on our backs. It is unfair to ask all of this of people. There are plenty of people who want to stay home and live what we think of as more traditional lives, raising children, keeping the home. But we can't do that if we can't trust the men who hold all of the financial power. There are women who want to do both, who want to work and have children. But we can't do that if the male partner in the relationship is not helping with the housework, and if our employers are not allowing for the fact that we exist in two spaces, as parents and as employees. There are women who want to do a bulk of the work who are married to men who want to do more of the stay-at-home job. We can't do that as long as the pay gap is so stark that women are making less money than they should so that they could support their husbands to stay at home. So many of these problems are economic, but all of them are political, and they require not women to step up, but they require men to step forward and start asking questions. Our last episode here was about the Rape Academy online. I still haven't seen masses of men protesting in the streets against this, against porn, against working conditions, against the fact that they don't do enough housework. And to be fair, I don't need men protesting in the streets. What I need is men protesting by doing the laundry, by doing the dishes, by doing the school run, by calling out other men one-on-one about their behavior. Because that's where this has to get solved. Feminists can talk about how angry we are about this, to the point where some of them do become separatists. But at the end of the day, if women are just talking to other women, we're preaching to the choir. It's men who need to take the leadership role that they say they're so good at in this, and the accountability that they say they're so good at in this, and very often they don't. As the U.S. becomes more economically problematic, there is a real worry that we will see large portions of the 4B movement or something similar occur here, and that is really difficult for society to sustain. It creates a lot of people who are not living the lives that they wanted to live, whether that's men or women, who actually would rather be in a relationship with each other. There are so many ways for people to find the pathways to have what they want. And yet over and over, because of so much indoctrination online, we see people not doing it. I said this was a podcast about democracy, and it is. Democracy does not work if only one half of society is carrying the load. It does not work economically, when the working class and the middle class are upholding the economic order while not reaping the benefits? It does not work when people who are Black and Brown and Asian are getting targeted for their race, despite how many times throughout history they have literally built our country. It does not work if gay folks and trans folks can't walk down the street without attack. And it does not work when Americans hate each other so much. At least American democracy doesn't work. Maybe others do. American democracy doesn't work when we hate each other so much that we move off into these separatist movements, regardless of what the conditions of separatism are. We have to understand that together is the path forward. And it doesn't work when the order of the day is misogyny and femicide, and that is so socially acceptable that you can rape and murder with impunity. As long as these incel movements continue, these pickup artists and other nonsense bros online make money off of making other men miserable and unhappy, as long as our young boys in K through 12 are globally showing higher rates of misogyny and hatred of women than ever before, as long as they are smashing their bones in their faces so they can get rebuilt cheeks, or as long as they are smashing the bones in their legs so they can try to get surgery to make themselves taller, as long as pediatricians are now having to have conversations saying, you can't give your son extra human growth hormone to make him over 6 feet tall, that's insane, as long as all of these things persist against the backdrop in this country of members of the U.S. government and economic order restricting women's rights, calling to restrict our right to vote, certainly restricting bodily autonomy, and denying us full personhood, democracy cannot function. It's not just divesting from men and feminist separatist movements like 4B. It's the fact that those movements are necessary or seen as necessary because of how impossible situations have become for so many women and children around the world. Separatism and divestment are a means of safety. What that means is they are symptoms of a disease that is devouring the heart of our democracy. What can you do about it? If you have men in your life, find ways to let them know how the media content they are watching is problematic. If you have men younger than 18 in your life, get in the game. The number of parents who fail their sons is catastrophic. Young boys should not be accessing anti-women and pro-broligarchy content online. Hating girls is not a phase, it's a lifestyle. And if you let young boys do it, then you are laying the groundwork for them to hate others and themselves. Young women are trained to handle young boys' emotions, whether that is in sexist dress codes, telling women that they are responsible for male predatory behavior, or pairing girls as young as elementary school up with boys in classes to help them regulate, or telling girls he's just joking or he probably likes you. The scope of revenge porn and AI-generated child sex abuse material in our elementary schools through high school is horrifying in scope and in the fact that it comes primarily from young boys who are taking pictures of female classmates and female teachers and using AI programs to develop sex abuse material, including child sex abuse material. This is not something that can be solved with a policy, though holding AI and social media to account will be a massive first step. It also needs to be addressed person to person, in particular, parent to child and father to son. We have let the rot get so bad that we have to build back up from the very ground because the rot has gotten to our very roots. Democracy requires accountability from all of us. So let's fight the empire together. Mother of Democracy is a Mother of Democracy podcast, formerly the Fun Sponge Media Group, with writer Amber Vail and sound producer Matthew Munyon. Thanks for listening.